Eddie Chavez. Ruben Nava. And Jesse Romero. Jesus 911.
Jesus 911 on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. My name is Ruben Nava. I'm in studio with my partner over in Arizona, Jesse Romero. Good morning, Jesse.
Reporting for duty, sir.
It's amazing how this technology allows us to be in two separate places. And
you're right, for the glory of God.
That's right, getting this God's message out here. Remember, we're the FBI, right? Faithful, believing intercessors. So we're here to bring you some intel, Catholic briefing. We are 10-8. What do we have in store today, Jesse?
Ruben, we got some an inspirational first segment. There's a black sheriff with a spine, literally. And I'm not sure if I told Richard, but there's a message on that article, and maybe Richard could cue it up as we talk about this black sheriff. But it's very inspirational just to see that there's law enforcement people out there that aren't afraid to stand against these mobs. And I wish that we had more chiefs of police. A lot of them just caved into the political pressure, to the mayors, to the governors. But this black sheriff, he says this: all deputized gun owners to stop godless BLM mob. Derry Daniels, an African-American sheriff of Clay County in North Florida, has a stern message for what he calls godless disruptors who have spread violence and death from coast to coast. He says if they try to invade his territory, he will deputize gun owners to help fight against them. Ruben, you know what? This is brilliant. I'll tell you why. We could stop Antifa and Black Lives Matter in their tracks if every chief of police and sheriff would basically, because they have this authority to do this, it's called posse comitatus. If every chief of police or sheriff in the country would call all the men, maybe like to city hall or to the police precincts or stations, if you don't have a record and you own a firearm, guess what? You are deputized right now. And you work for me. You're under my authority to go and stop and arrest Antifa. They have the power and authority to marshal hundreds of thousands of good men that would report to these police stations and to the city hall, and they would receive that partial posse comitatus status to restore order to our society. I think this guy's into something, and this is brilliant, Ruben.
That's what our sheriffs did in the past. Do you remember the movie Tombstone? The sheriff, Wyatt Earp, he deputized his right hand man, you know, his buddy, whose name I don't recall, but that's what they did in the old days in the West, and so he's another sheriff. I think he. You know, the fact that Daryl Daniels is an African American, I think he could say this a little easier. A lot of white police chiefs might feel that they'll be deemed racist if they said something like this to go against, arming themselves up against the BLM. Unfortunately, that's a death sentence in someone's career if they are labeled that, and it may not even be a fact, but. This is the world we're living in right now. That is like a scarlet letter on your chest. you know
the R word.
Yeah.
The R word. You're an R.
Yeah.
You're right, Ruben. You got a point. You got a point. You're right. A white police chief or a sheriff is going to be very reticent to posse comitatus all the good guys in his town or city. Especially if somebody, goes off the rails and unjustly or uses excessive force against one of these millennial anarchists.
Yeah. And, you see some of these Antifa people, they're just, they're little, most of them little Caucasian guys that you know, they wouldn't last a minute walking through the, you know, the inner cities by themselves. You know, they just wouldn't. It's because it's that mob mentality. They've got backup, you know, and so they do these things that they would probably not normally do by themselves, because they've been empowered and emboldened, and you know, the liberal politicians have also emboldened them, you know, and they're being paid, funded by one of the richest men around, and so it's sad. But this is very refreshing to hear the sheriff Darrell Daniels talk like this. You know, he says that he took an oath to support, protect, and defend the Constitution and the government of the United States and the state of Florida. And see, this is in another article. He says he takes that responsibility very seriously, as he ensures that the rights of all citizens are not infringed upon. And so since he's been elected into office, his two main initiatives: crime reduction and community engagement. And he has an emphasis on narcotics enforcement, because, you know, down there in Florida, unlike California, we're close to Mexico. Florida's close to,
what's the Gulf of Mexico, and you get all that stuff coming from the Caribbean islands.
Yeah, exactly.
All the dope
coming up from there. And so, he's had a stellar career. 29 years in law enforcement, and he's advanced through the ranks. He actually started off in he was in the U.S. Navy, and then he was also deployed in an aircraft carrier. And he started with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. And you know what was interesting is that he holds an undergraduate degree in criminal justice administration and in interdisciplinary studies, as well as a master's degree in religion. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's received several distinguished recognitions for his accomplishments in law enforcement and for his involvement in his community. I heard a clip from him, and he was exhorting his people, the people. He was kind of giving like a sheriff's address of not a state of the union, but more just to talk to the community. And he was asking for their prayers. He was telling me specifically what to pray for. And he goes, "I'll be praying for you. You pray for me." And so he's not ashamed to ask for prayer and to bring up the God that
the God component.
Yep. Because a lot of people are afraid of that. Let's just be honest.
Especially more in the blue states. I mean, they're deathly afraid of bringing up God if you're a sheriff or chief of police. And with him, he's got Governor DeSantis over there who, he's on board with all of this. But here's what the article also says. It says Clay County is a suburb of Jacksonville, just outside where the RNC convention will be held. That would make his county a prime target for domestic terrorists, especially given the fact that President Trump will be delivering a live speech from there. Sheriff Daniels does not want his officers assaulted, and he will never give a stand-down order, and anyone attacking them will surely pay a price.
Nice.
It says Daniels says he will not allow the destruction of property and lives in his county, and if he finds that his deputies are overwhelmed by Antifa and Black Lives Matter, he will deputize legal gun owners to join in the fight to protect the people he serves. Ruben, that's leadership.
Yeah.
That's incredible leadership. Come on. Next sentence, it says, the BLM Antifa mob have promised to bust in thousands of domestic terrorists to harass, intimidate, and potentially murder Trump supporters or members of the conservative media. It is great to see a law enforcement leader making such a statement and placing the trust in law-abiding gun owners to restore order.
Yeah, you're right. And this is exactly why the left has been trying to take our guns for so long, because when you get the guns, then the people cannot defend themselves, and they can just run roughshod over the communities and instill their own brand of policing. And so this is when the founding fathers, you know, wrote the Constitution. It was so that a tyrannical government doesn't do this, you know. And so I'm all for the Second Amendment, Justin, and they just made it harder, especially in California, to get ammunition. To we're one of the strictest gun laws states here in California. So I know it's probably not so in Arizona, but
And you mentioned something about the fact that the founding fathers, when they wrote this, the Second Amendment to the Constitution, I'm sure, Ruben, I mean, they, in times past, in history, I know in recent times, we've seen it with the, with Russia, with the Bolsheviks, and with Adolf Hitler, with the Nazis. One of the things that they did before those governments, when they basically took over the country, the first thing that they did, one of their first acts that they did against the citizenry, was to disarm them.
Right.
And so I think, you know, the founding fathers were illuminated by God. I really do. I think projecting in the future that they would see that things like this could happen, and the founding fathers, you know, I think there was some divine direction there as they were writing the Second Amendment. Because again, that comports with Romans chapter 13 verses 1-4. The doctrine of self-defense in the Catechism, 2263. We see David and Goliath. We see Moses, took out an Egyptian soldier who was trying to, you know, beat up a Jewish slave. Self-defense is allowed in Scripture, and the founding fathers knew that one of the ways to defend yourself has to be ultimately with a gun.
Mm, yeah. So don't believe that that guns kill people. People kill people. So, you know, I have guns in my house, and not one of them has fired by themselves, Jesse.
Well, thank God that we got a man with a spine over in Florida. Thank God for this sheriff.
All right. We'll be back. We're going to be...
you're going to love this next clip. You're going to love this next clip.
Let's hear it.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time, because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Pro-life across America, the Billboard people.
How does the baby move in your tummy?
How does the baby eat?
Can the baby hear me?
How did the baby get in there?
Wow, a pregnancy can sure generate a lot of questions, but what's important is that a baby is a baby, inside and out of the womb, not just after birth, but 9 months before, at conception.
That's right, every baby is a miracle. Hello, my name is Marianne Kuharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America. If you know someone who is pregnant or in need of alternatives or assistance, or would like to support the work of Pro-Life Across America, please visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org, or better yet, simply dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword pro-life. Pro-Life Across America is non-political and totally educational.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception.
Pro-Life Across America.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911. We are back. Two-man car, 10-8, and giving you some intel. Jesse, we're going to be talking about a former football player that he too has a spine. He's standing up.
Yep.
For what he believes, and it's awesome to be able to hear a man that lives by his convictions and his values. This is a guy by the name of Marcellus Wiley. I'm familiar with him because several years ago on my way home, I would tune into one of the sports talk shows on my drive home, and I would hear him, I believe in Max Kellerman on ESPN Radio. And this guy, Marcellus Wiley, he's not your typical inner city athlete that came up. He came up in the ghetto. Let's be honest. He came from a good family. They even put him in Catholic school. Went to St. Monica's in Santa Monica, California, where he starred in football and track, and then became an all-conference pick. He ended up getting several offers to play in college, but the one he took was at Columbia University. He went to an Ivy League school where it's not known for its football. They're known for their brains. He played tailback, defensive end, and kick returner for the Lions up there in Columbia, and he was drafted in the NFL. Very seldom do Ivy League players get drafted in the NFL. He was a second-round pick. He was also an All-Pro for the, he played for several different teams. He played 10 years in the NFL, played for the Chargers, where he was an All-Pro. And I just found it refreshing when I heard this, him speaking out against Black Lives Matter and what they want to do. It was a conversation he was having on one of his shows where he was being asked if they should paint the Black Lives Matters on the NBA courts when they open up back up the NBA season. That NBA court would be, yeah, I believe it's in Orlando, where they're going to play with without any fans. And so Jess, do you want to add something to that before we play the clip?
Well, no, I'm ready. Mr. Engineer, can you play that clip?
I don't know how many people really look into the mission statement of Black Lives Matter, but I did. And when you look into it, there's a couple things that jump out to me. Being a father and a husband, that's my mission in life right now. How do I reconcile that, what I just told you, with this mission statement that says, quote, we dismantle the patriarchal practice. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement. Children from single-parent homes versus two-parent homes. The children from the single-parent homes, this is in 1995, I was reading this. 5 times more likely to commit suicide. 6 times more likely to be in poverty. 9 times more likely to drop out of high school. 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances. 14 times more likely to commit rape. 20 times more likely to end up in prison. And 32 times more likely to run away from home. I knew that. You know why I knew it? Because a lot of my friends didn't have family structures that were nuclear like mine, and they found themselves outside of their dreams and goals and aspirations.
Wow. That's former NFL star Marcellus Wiley. That was a clip on Tucker Carlson's show. And it was an incredibly powerful short summary about the importance of being a husband and a father. I like what he said. That's my mission statement. He talked about his duty to protect his family and his children from the likes of Black Lives Matter. Because what he did, he went to their website, just like anybody should, and he read their mission statement. That's all he did. Mm-hmm. And he said, wait a minute. These points that Black Lives Matter are trying to promote, this is offensive to blacks. Not only it's offensive to any family, to any father. They want to restructure the family, the patriarchal family. And and I'll tell you, I think, why he's offended more than anything else. Because he knows, if there's one thing that the black family needs right now, is a father. I just looked on Google right now. Here's what it says, okay? Percentage of black households without a father. Here's what it says. This is particularly acute in the black community, where over 70% of black kids are born outside of wedlock.
Yep.
In some communities, like Southeast Washington, D.C., a staggering 84% of black children live in homes without a father. And guess what, Ruben? Black Lives Matter wants to restructure the family. Restructure? And by the way, it doesn't include a patriarchy. They don't want a patriarchal family. Marcellus Wiley knows that this is destruction to Western civilization, as it's already destroying the black family right now. And this is why he railed against Black Lives Matter in his 2 or 3 little minute rant.
Yeah, this was on a sports show that he actually said this, and then Tucker Carlson picked it up and showed it on his show. He said this is great. This needs to be go out, and he's taken a lot of heat for his statements. This is Marcellus Wiley, because being black and you know, people will call him a sellout, you know, an Uncle Tom, and he says, but man, the NFL, he goes, they gave me a good life, you know. I'm not going to sit there and say that, you know, that I've been oppressed. I mean, he's created millions of dollars playing football. So who is he to say that that the NFL is run by what, just because, you know, the majority of the owners are white. In fact, I think all the owners are white. But right now in the NFL, they're caving in. They're caving into this Black Lives Matter. They're going to, and I hope that everybody just shuts off the NFL this year, because they're going to.
I agree, Ruben.
Yeah,
they're here.
They're going to put play a song, and it might be a nice song, but they're calling it the Black National Anthem. They're going to play it before every game, and then they're going to play the real national anthem, or then that's when the players are going to take a knee to show their solidarity. And I think it's just disgusting that they're going to do that for. To go against the very men who gave their lives so that they have the right to do that, and the country, that the flag, that it stands so tall. And I, you know what, I'm gonna have to play another clip on another show where I heard the best clip just on the flag. It was actually an African American man that's giving this little 2 minutes talk about Old Glory, about the flag. We'll have to have that on in another show. It's awesome. But so he, you know, when I too looked up the Black Lives Matter, Jess, I went to their website, and exactly what he says, that they want to destroy the you know, the nuclear family. And it was started by a couple of, I guess,
Marxist.
Yeah, well, Marxist, but they were also LGBTQ. They're pushing that whole agenda, you know, so they're anti-men. If you hear these ladies, They're against the men, and they're just trying to create a whole different dynamic in the household, which doesn't work. You can't go against God's plan for us and think it's going to work. God laid it out this way on purpose, you know.
And that's what works. Patriarchy works because it comes from God the Father, and the opposite of patriarchy is anarchy, which is basically no order or disorder. And that doesn't work. And we're not saying that all fathers are perfect, but there's a standard. The standard is St. Joseph. If you want to look at the perfect father, look at St. Joseph. You want to look at the perfect mother, look at the Blessed Virgin Mary. Okay? Not, you know, not Jay-Z and Beyonce, and, you know, not, you
God,
know.
No.
yeah, not anybody else that you see out there in Hollywood. The perfect structure of mom and dad is Saint Joseph and the Blessed Mother, and that's what we should all be striving for. Every other construction apart from that, any other design about, you know, polyamory, you know, the, it just passed, I think, in this one state, I forget, three people in a relationship, you know, homosexual unions, any other structure aside from the Adam and Eve, Saint Joseph, Blessed Virgin Mary structure is a disorder. And I'm going to run to you some statistics that Marcellus Wiley, I got these statistics from the Knights of Columbus, from their webpage, that Knights of Columbus National. It says this: children from fatherless homes are 15.3 times more likely to have behavioral disorders, 4.6 times more likely to commit suicide, 6.6 times more likely to become teenage mothers, 24.3 times more likely to run away, 15.3 times more likely to have behavioral disorders, 6.3 times more likely to be in a state-operated institution, 10.8 times more likely to commit rape, 6.6 times more likely to drop out of school, 15.3 times more likely to end up in prison while a teenager, 73% of adolescent murders come from mother-only homes, and 6.3 times more likely again, to be in state-operated institutions. Ruben, you take the father out of the family, and it's a disaster for society, and it's even a disaster spiritually, because I've also read that if the father's not at home and he's checked out from his faith, only 2% of the kids will practice their Catholic faith. If the father's at home with mom, 75% of the kids will practice their Catholic faith.
I received a clip from a friend of mine yesterday on my phone. It was just a short clip from a black program. It was a female that was announcing it, and they had six fathers there, and they were going to each father, say, okay, how many kids do you have with how many women? Out of these six men, one guy had fathered like 14 kids from, you know, four different women. But out of these six men, they fathered a total of 87 children from over 20 women. And there's absolutely no way they can put time into being a father for all these children. And they're going to
They have them scattered all across the country.
Yeah, they're going to have, you know, it's not enough to just go buy them things and send them things for Christmas. You got to be in their lives. You got to do their homework with them. You got to teach them how to pray. You got to be there with them. And this is happening all over the country. And when you do that, then you get the statistics you just read off. Just talking to people in the county jail, Jess, I would probably say just in my own, study of it, I'd say over 80% of the people that I talked to in the county jails came from broken homes, didn't have a father figure in the house. And, you know, the same, it's probably not as bad in the Hispanic community, but
we're catching up, Ruben.
We're right there. And a lot of those guys, their fathers are in prison. So they say, well, what chance did I have? I'm kind of destined to come here. And going back, Jesse, to the Black Lives Matter mission statement, you know, it's, you see how much hogwash it's full of. It says, we acknowledge, respect, and celebrate differences and commonalities.
Come on. They don't.
You have a difference of opinion, and they want to demonize you.
And they want to destroy your property. And they want to punch you in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. So basically what we're saying here is that this Black Lives Matter statement is...
And by the way, we give 5 stars for Marcellus Wiley. He's got 5 stars for this.
Amen. Yeah. Way to go, Marcellus.
Yep.
We need more guys to stand up to these oppressors, the real racists.
Exactly.
We'll come back. When we come back, we're going to be talking...
Hi, this is Jesse Romero from the Terry and Jesse Show, also from Jesus 911. Let's face it, we all need to use the internet, but we need screen accountability. Why? Pornography is a huge problem, especially on the internet. And every time we tap into the internet, we get bombarded with images and temptations that degrade our humanity. So we need Covenant Eye to block these pornographic sites and advertisements from infiltrating our lives. Covenant Eyes helps us take custody of our eyes and custody of our intellect. So I recommend you go to CovenantEyes.com and type in the promo code VMPR to support the network. Protect yourself and your family from the imminent threats on the internet. www.CovenantEyes.com, code VMPR. Live porn free. Thank you for listening to Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Thank you. God bless you. Keep the faith.
Healthcare news today seems to be coming from everywhere and everyone. It's confusing at least and untrustworthy at the worst. Dr. Aceta is a faithful Catholic in the Kern County community. He is trustworthy, well-researched, and will only give expert opinion on matters in his own specialty. Catholic teaching at its entirety is of utmost importance to Dr. Aceta. Give Dr. Aceta a call for your obstetrics and gynecological needs at 661-695-6617.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, where iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another. We're giving you some, we've been talking about Black Lives Matter. We've been talking about a sheriff with a spine. We're going to be talking about Ben Carson and what he thinks of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, but right now, Ruben, let's talk about the California State Assembly passes a bill to pay black residents reparations. It says here, you can never have equality when one race of people is treated better than another race of people, but that's just what happened. The Assembly of the State of California, because where else would this happen, has voted to pay reparations to its black residents for slavery. The vote passed by a 61-12 margin and now goes to the state Senate, where it will likely pass, and to the Democrat governor, who will likely sign it. And the most insane part of the entire thing is that California entered the Union in 1850 as a state where slavery was illegal, the Associated Press reported. So if the bill passes the Senate and is signed into law by Governor Newsom, eight people with backgrounds in racial justice reforms will lead a study into who would be eligible for compensation due to slavery and how it should be awarded. Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, a Democrat from San Diego who wrote the bill, said the study would reiterate California's history of abetting slavery even as it joined the Union as a free state in 1850. The state of California, in which no one ever legally owned slaves, is about to pay reparations for a crime that nobody committed in California. So what do we have in California? There's nothing more than rich white liberals, the article says, wanting to wash themselves of the white guilt they have for the color of skin they happen to be born with. The discriminatory practices of the past echo into the everyday lives of today's Californians, says Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, a Democrat from San Diego, the one who wrote the bill. She says, this country has taught itself to hate African Americans and to deny the history that has brought us here. She said that at a press conference. But the panel that would be formed is going to have to convince California residents that they should pay reparation to black residents. Ruben, you want to finish off the article?
Yeah. Let's see if I got the right spot here.
This is the response, really.
Go ahead, Jess.
The response really has to be framed around the issue of continuing racial injustice that started back in 1619, when Africans were stolen from Africa and brought here as enslaved people. Lisa Holder, an attorney who teaches about civil rights at your alma mater, Ruben, UCLA School of Law, she said, then you don't get into this messy, unintelligible notion of who's directly linked to a slave. So you could tell that she's for this reparations bill.
Okay, so it goes on to say that the bill intends to delve into our nation's history and expose the extent of slavery in the entire United States as a premise for paying the reparations. And this bill would establish the task force to study and develop reparations proposals for African Americans consisting of eight members. It says the bill would require the task force to, among other things, identify, compile, and synthesize the relevant corpus of evidentiary documentation.
Of the institution of slavery that existed within the U.S. and the colonies. Yeah. And here's the most important point. It says, as a result of the historic and continued discrimination, African Americans continue to suffer debilitating economic, educational, and health hardships, which include having nearly 1 million black people incarcerated and an unemployment rate more than twice the current white unemployment rate. It says that reparations will be based on the committee. The committee will base its call for reparations on the lingering negative effects of the institution of slavery and discrimination. Well, forget the fact that it was never practiced in California. Who cares about details, right?
Yeah.
But make California. Ruben, here's the perfect response. Muhammad Ali was asked about reparations years ago. I think you'll be... Let me read this and share this with the audience. This is from Dinesh D'Souza, a Stanford scholar. He was a former speechwriter for President Reagan. He writes about reparations, and he says this. He says, does America owe blacks now living reparations on account of slavery? No more than it owes reparations to the descendants of whites who died in the Civil War. I don't mean this in a callous way of suggesting that what's done is done. Rather, I mean that there's an enormous debt owed to the Northern men who died in the Civil War. But those heroes are dead, and their descendants are scattered. What is owed is more than money can pay. We discharge our debt by honoring and remembering. Similarly, there's a debt owed to slaves whose labor was wrongly taken from them. That debt, too, is best discharged through memory, because the slaves are dead, and their descendants, this will be a hard pill for progressives to swallow, are better off as a consequence of their ancestors being hauled from Africa to America. Wow. Better off, you say? The point is illustrated by the great African-American boxer Muhammad Ali. In the early 1970s, Muhammad Ali fought for the heavyweight title against George Foreman. The fight was held in the African nation of Zaire. It was called the Rumble in the Jungle. Ali won the fight, and upon returning to the United States, he was asked by reporters, "Hey, champ, what did you think of Africa?" Ali replied, "Thank God my granddaddy got on that boat." Well, let me repeat that again. Is this microphone on? Hold on. Let me check my mic. Is this thing on? Let me read this again. So Muhammad Ali, who made buckets of money, millions of dollars, and good for him. He capitalized on his skill. So he defeats George Foreman back in the 1970s in Zaire, Africa. It was called the Rumble in the Jungle. So he gets back to the U.S., and reporters, they flock him at the airport, and they ask him, "Champ, what did you think of Africa?" Ali replied, "Thank God my granddaddy got on that boat." Wow. Close quote. Now, Dinesh writes, there's a characteristic, mischievous pugnancy to Ali's remark. Yet it also expresses a widely held sentiment amongst black people. I mean, can you imagine? I think if you'd asked Mike Tyson the same question, "Hey, go, have you been to Africa?" Michael Jordan, LeBron James, I mean, Michael Jackson, Kanye West, show them Africa versus how they're living right now. I think all of them would say what Muhammad Ali said. "I'm glad my granddaddy stepped into that boat." And then it goes on to say here, it says, Muhammad Ali recognizes that for all the horrors of slavery, it was a transmission belt that brought Africans into the orbit of Western freedom. The slaves were not better off. The boat Ali refers to brought the slaves through a horrific middle passage to a life of painful servitude, yet their descendants, like Ali, are better off today. And they admit it. Muhammad Ali was honest enough to admit this. And so was the black feminist writer Zora Neale Hurston. Of slavery, this black feminist writer wrote the following quote: "From what I can learn, it was sad. Slavery was sad, certainly. But my ancestors who lived and died in it are dead. The white men who profited by their labor and lives are dead also. I have no personal memory of those times and no responsibility for them. Neither has the grandson of the man who held my folks. I have no intention of wasting my time beating on old graves.
Yeah.
Slavery is the price I paid for civilization, and that is worth it all that I have paid through my ancestors for it."
Yeah. You know, Muhammad Ali's son, he actually spoke out recently, and he said, "If my father was alive, he would not be supporting Black Lives Matter." And, yeah. And so There's also an article that I read a couple weeks ago when the slave traders were African, and nobody seems to be pointing out that the white man got these slaves from Africa from other African Americans, other Africans that were selling them.
Yes.
So how comes nobody's saying anything about those people selling out their own people? And one of the guys that makes a comment in the article, and this is written by the way, if you want to read it, it's written by a professor, Ada Obi Trisha Nawobani. And anyway, he lays out all these different people who they're giving their remarks about Africans selling their own people. But this Mr. Chisba takes a similar view. Slavery was wrong, but I do not carry upon my shoulders the sins of my forefathers so that I should go around saying sorry. I don't think so, he said. One of the other big men over there, he says, his name is Mr. Duke, doesn't believe that Africans should play much of a part in the American reparations conversation because the injustices the descendants of slaves suffer stem primarily from their maltreatment and deprivation in the U.S. The Africans didn't see anything wrong with slavery, he said, so even if the white man wasn't there, they would still use these people as their domestics. However, because the white man was now involved and fortunes were being made, that was when the criminality came in. So they started it by selling their own people, and
yep.
they would conquer a tribe, and then they would take their men for slaves and sell them off, and they'd go to, they were sent to Europe, they were sent to the Americas, and doesn't make it right, but we just can't keep living in the past, man.
Exactly. And Ruben, and I'll tell you, even in this country, there were black slave owners here. Look what I'm reading from page 125 of Dinesh D'Souza's book. It's called America. He says this: moreover, from the founding through the end of the Civil War, there were black slave owners in America. I am referring to the free blacks who themselves owned black slaves. While the existence of black slave ownership is known, its magnitude is surprising. Get this. A review of the relevant scholarship shows that in 1830, there were 3,500 American black slave owners who collectively owned more than 10,000 blacks. Is this microphone on? Let me check. Yeah, it's on.
It's on.
3,500 black slave owners in 1830 who owned more than 10,000 blacks that they bought off the ship.
Were those families going to start helping to pay the reparations, Jesse?
Unbelievable.
I don't think so. Okay, we come back here from Ben Carson.
Help the Helpless, a Minnesota St. Paul nonprofit organization chaired by Father of Tyr and volunteers, is humbly asking you for your kind support to help the poor and the handicapped children in India and Ecuador. Through financial support from the Help of the Helpless benefactors, the children are provided with clothing, food, education, shelter, and the teachings of the Catholic Church. The mission is to help children thrive and become self-sufficient young adults leading productive lives. We also provide aid to poor families in Ecuador with food baskets, medicines, medical assistance, and help with funeral needs for the deceased. The work in India is done by Father Antonio's organization, St. Mary's. In Ecuador, the work is being done by the Servant Sisters of the Home of Mother. You can call us at 877-762-8857. To learn more, please visit our website, www.helpthehelpless.org. God bless you.
Jesus said in Matthew 26, "Stay awake and pray that you may not enter into temptation." According to St. Ephrem, Jesus, who feared nothing, experienced fear and asked to be freed from death, although he knew it was impossible. How much more must we persevere in prayer before temptation assails us, so that we may be freed when the test has come? May God grant that we may withstand temptation and carry out His will in all things.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, we are talking about some men that are displaying some courage. And, you know, it reminds me of something I read. Napoleon Bonaparte made a distinction between two kinds of courage, regular courage and 2 o'clock in the morning courage. That the rarest attribute among generals, said the little corporal, is 2 o'clock in the morning courage. And Jesse, you and I know, both know what 2 o'clock in the morning courage is. Mm. Going out there, responding to a burglar alarm call or people coming out of buildings with property and guns in their hands. So we're talking about guys that have had courage, the Marcellus Wileys, the sheriff we spoke about in the first segment. And we're going to be talking about
Ben Carson,
another guy who's got a spine. And this is an article that was taken 5 years ago, though. It was when Black Lives Matter was coming into
in their power. Infancy, I think.
Yeah, they were started in 2013 after the Trayvon Martin incident when he was killed by George Zimmerman. And that wasn't a cop, by the way, but they always throw that in with all the other cop shootings, It was a zealous guy trying to protect his neighborhood.
Yeah.
Who was found innocent, by the way. Anyway, let's get into this.
Yeah, but let's not let the facts confuse us, right?
Right. And by the way, today, I guess that movie comes out. I don't know if we'll be able to see it. I don't know if the theaters are open. I have no idea. But the movie that's by Larry Elder, and it's a documentary.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's supposed to start today, called Uncle Tom.
Oh, no, that's a horrible time to release a movie right now.
Well, he's doing it because he's got a lot of conservative blacks on the show, you know?
I know, but what I'm saying is right now with the lockdowns and stuff,
yeah,
I don't think he's going to get as much viewers as he could if this, if he would have waited a little bit longer and released it later.
Yeah. So let's get into this.
All right. It says the idea that disrupting protests, this is 5 years ago, okay, when Ben Carson was running for president. It says, the idea that disrupting and protesting Bernie Sanders' speeches will change what is wrong in America is lunacy. The Black Lives Matter movement is focused on the wrong targets. This is Ben Carson speaking here. To the detriment of blacks who would like to see real change, and to the benefit of its powerful white liberal funders using the attacks on Sanders for political purposes that mean nothing for the problems that face our community. The notion, this is all Ben Carson, this is a speech. The notion that some lives might matter less than others is meant to engage.
Enrage.
Oh, that's right, enrage. Put on my glasses here. That anger is distracting us from what matters most. We're right to be angry, but we have to stay smart. Of course, the protesters are right that racial policing issues exist and some rotten policemen took actions that killed innocent people. Those actions were inexcusable, and they should be prosecuted to deter such acts in the future. But unjust treatment from police did not fill our inner cities with people who face growing hopelessness, young men and women who can't find jobs, parents don't have the skills to compete in a modern job market, far too many families are torn and tattered by self-inflicted wounds, violence often walks alongside people who have given up hope. Ben Carson says, I grew up in neighborhoods most Americans were told never to drive through. I saw bullets, drugs, and death in the same places I played tag and ball with my friends. Both of my older cousins died on the streets where I lived. I thought that was my destiny, but my mother didn't. She changed all of that. She saved my brother and me from being killed on those streets with nothing but a library card. My mother knew what the problems were, and she shielded me and my brother from them. And I can tell you, she wasn't worried about socialist senators from tiny rural states. He's, yeah. I think he's talking about
Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders, yeah. Black Lives Matter could learn from her to focus on the real sources of our hopelessness. This is where we should march. Go ahead, Ruben. You want to pick it up?
Yeah. So he's telling us now. He's telling where they should put their focus on. Let's head down to the Board of Education. Teaching is a tough job, and thank God there was a teacher who convinced me that I was not dumb. But our schools are failing, and we have no power to abandon them. The actions of a rogue police officers take black lives one at a time. Our public school system has destroyed black lives, not in the ones and twos, but in the whole generations.
Good statement. And, wow, that's a powerful statement.
And you know, that's why the conservatives have been trying to put vouchers out there, and the Democrats are the ones who keep shooting it down because they don't want their kids to go to better schools. They don't want to give them that opportunity. They just want to continue to brainwash them, and it's that's what it is. And these schools are now
the re-education camps, Ruben.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. He says the schools don't teach and our children don't learn. Too many public schools are controlled by teachers. Unions focus more on the convenience and compensation of adults rather than education of children who started out far behind. Their failures don't kill as quickly, but they do kill as surely as a bullet. He says, we got to confront the entertainment industry that lines its pockets by glamorizing a life where black men and thugs and our women are trash. Let's tell them we plan to start talking with our wallets.
Great observation. Wow.
Same thing goes with the rap music. They talk about beating women and drug dealing and all that that thug life. And the kids soak it up. Not only black kids, but white kids too. It's a time for them to pick up on someone else because we have had enough. Demeaning women is not an art. It shouldn't be a profitable. Neither is glorifying violence and equating prison time with authenticity. Straight Out of Compton, number one in the movie theaters, is just the latest example. You only have to watch the trailers. And he says, let's go down to City Hall. Living behind a door with three deadbolts is not living in freedom. Being too scared to walk around your block at night is not the pursuit of happiness we were all promised. And he's not talking about that door that Maxwell Smart had when he had like 10 locks on it.
The cone of silence.
Yeah. So he says, let's go over to the crack house. We need to tear it down. Profiting from selling poison to our children and destroying lives must not be the ambition of our children. These monuments to our destruction deserve our active scorn, not our silent acceptance. And, you know, a lot of these kids, you ask them, hey, how come you're not going out there and finding a job? Well, I can make more money out here selling dope. You know, why would I want to go get a job, get minimum wage, you know? It's the mindset. It needs to be changed. Go ahead, Jess.
Yeah, Ben Carson is Ruben. He's picking the scab right now. I mean, he's talking exactly about the problems in the black community. People like him, that sheriff, you know, our friend Paul Clay, you know, Wiley, the NFL football player, Larry Elder. There's Candace Owens. Thank
Brandon
God there's
Tatum.
A lot of, Officer Tatum.
Yeah.
A lot of good black people who's just... are just speaking like John the Baptist about the problems in their own community, and they're not saying it's the white man's problem. It's the white man doing this. No, they're saying, you know what they're all saying, Ruben? All these great black American voices. What they're saying is what Michael Jackson's saying. He says, "Look at the man in the mirror. See that guy you're looking in the mirror? That's the problem. You want to have a bunch of baby mamas and run around." From one woman to another, and just impregnate them and just leave them without a daddy. You're the problem, dude. Look at the man in the mirror. Quit saying, it's the white cop down the street, man. He's keeping me down. The white cop down the street's not pulling your pants down and making you fornicate and sire children all over the county. Yeah. We'll continue here.
My dad used to say the same thing. If you don't like the guy in the mirror, then you need to change it. Then only you or he can change it. You know, the one in the mirror that's looking back at him. So...
yeah, that's wisdom right there.
Yeah.
That's that, and that's responsibility. Okay, the article's Ben Carson says, we should go to Washington for decades. They have fought the war on poverty. Poverty won, we lost. Over $19 trillion have been wasted. But can anyone identify a single battle won as a result? We certainly have not helped the poor lift themselves out of the ruts of poverty, as Lyndon B. Johnson promised Far from it. These programs have been a great American failure. What do you think? Shape your opinion with a digest of takes on current events. We should have a talk with the Democrat Party. Let's tell them we don't want to be clothed, fed, and housed. We want honor and dignity.
Yep.
We don't want a plan to give us, you know, nice housing, public housing in nice neighborhoods. We want an end to excuses for schools that leave us without the means to buy our own houses where we choose to live. We want the skills needed to compete, not a consolation prize of Section 8 housing, food stamps, and a lifetime of governmental paperwork. Finally, we need to go over to the Republican Party. We need to tell them that they've ignored us for too long. They need to invite us in and listen to us. We need to communicate and find a different way. Ben Carson ends, there are many things to be angry about, but when you're consumed by hopelessness, he says, Bernie Sanders isn't one of the ways to fill your hopelessness with. Great statements.
That's right. And
here's here's another good statement just came out. Kanye West just, I'm not into rap music, but he just singles out, it says Kanye West singles out Planned Parenthood over industry's controversial roots in the black community. So apparently he came out with a song where he's calling out Planned Parenthood for targeting blacks for abortion. So good for you, Kanye West.
That's right. That's right. So we just have to remember, keep our eyes on Jesus, imitate Christ, you know, as 2 Corinthians says, but we all with unveiled face beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord as being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. St. Paul says that. And so we got to walk with our head held high and not making excuses for the cards we've been dealt, you know. But let's just go out there and make a difference in the lives of others. When you start sowing into other people, take your eyes off yourself and start looking to help other people, helping your brothers out. It's going to make a world of difference. And if everybody does that, we can really change this world. And
that's right. Yeah, Reuben, Fulton Sheen said, the best thing you can do when you think you got problems and you're suffering, forget about, don't be introspective and say, oh, woe is me, I've got cancer. Oh, woe is me, I've got whatever. I've got a pacemaker. No, he says, look to people that are suffering worse than you are, and that just basically takes away all the pain.
Yeah.
Because you realize that there's people out there that need your help, and you can do something for them, and this takes you away from being self-centered and egocentric.
My mom used to say, hey, you know, quit crying about the shoes you don't have, because there's going to be somebody who doesn't, you know, who doesn't cry about that because they don't have any feet, you know. So you just think about that. We are so privileged to live in the United States, and it's given us every opportunity to, everyone has the same opportunity to be, you look at Ben Carson as the brain surgeon, you know, now he's the secretary of HUD, you know.
Right.
The HUD housing. So here we go. Coming up on another show, Gary Mashuda. You've been listening to Jesus 911. Gary's going to be coming to you from the Midwest Command Center in Michigan. So go out there and live your lives. Wrap it up, Jess.
We'll talk to you next time, same Christ channel. God bless you. Viva Cristo Rey.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.